9b, we had just learned that Batsheva had received a military get. We were dealing with, side note, from our main discussion, the question of what exactly, what sort of testimony or what sort of circumstance is sufficient to prohibit a married couple to each other. Initially, the question was, what about if the statement is made, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, the groom says on the wedding night that he didn't find, what we assume is, he didn't find a hymen. That's actually going to be clarified further in the Gemara. But he says that he didn't find that. Is that sufficient to prohibit them to each other? And we ended up with a statement in which we said that Rabbi Elazar's position is that the following set of things can prohibit husband and wife to each other. Number one, if there are two witnesses that something happened. Number two, if there was one witness, and there was kinui and stira, there was a warning from the husband and she was alone with the, and she was alone with one witness, sorry, not a witness that there was a sexual act, but a witness to her having been alone, with this person. Or the claim of Pesach Pasuach, the claim of, I didn't find the Besulim. So we asked a question, given that you're telling me that witnesses are sufficient to prohibit them to each other, why wasn't Batsheva prohibited to Uriah and therefore prohibited to David as the one who triggered the prohibition to Uriah? So the first answer of the Gemara was that was Ones. What happened with Batsheva and David was not willing, not in the sense we said that it was rape, but in the sense that she did not have the option of refusing. So that was the first idea. And then the second answer that was given at the top of Testament Beis, the top of 9b, was that Batsheva had received a military get, that David's army learned from what Shaul's army did. And just like we saw that David was sent to the camp when the Jews were facing off with Plishtim led by Goliath, we saw that David was told to take their aruba, which the Gemara explained as davar ha-me'orav beino levena, that which is blended between him and her, by which we understand it means take their get. So too, David's army, the soldiers would give their wives a get, and therefore Batsheva doesn't become prohibited to Uriah because Batsheva is not married to Uriah. That was what we said last time. So, first of all, just on a very basic level, in terms of this, you know, idea that David is taking the get for his brothers, this is a problematic statement. Not only is it problematic in the sense that the text really, by saying take their aruba, jumping from aruba to get is difficult, but it's also difficult from a story perspective, because if you learn Perek Yud Zayin in Shmuel Aleph, which is where that story appears, you find out that the Jews had been camped there for 40 days at the battlefield before the day David showed up. If you're telling me that they gave their wives a get before going out to battle, why is it 6 weeks later that David is showing up to pick up this get? It would seem like, you know, I mean, that's not the way it's supposed to work. Yeah, granted that, some of us take a long time to get our insurance in order, long after we should have taken care of it. Nonetheless, the idea that they were taking, you know, this precaution of arranging a get 6 weeks after going out to the battlefield is very strange. So that's just one point that's worth noting. Second point, Machlokes Rashi Tosfos, regarding how to understand this get that they used to give. And here I'm going to share the screen so that you'll have the Gemara in front of you. I want to first look over at Rashi and then look over at Tosfos. So it's the top Rashi on Tes Amud Beis, on 9b. Get Krisus Kosev Leishto. He would write, one of these soldiers would write, a get for his wife. She'im Yamus Bamilchama, that if he were to die at the battlefield, Yehe get miyom ksivaso, it would be a get retroactive to when it was written. The idea being to prevent a requirement for yibum, for marriage to the brother-in-law, because then you don't know, what if he won't do it, what if he can't be accessed, whatever. So that's the idea, is that it was a conditional get. And then, Hari meis Uriah bar Melchama, after all, Uriah did die, and therefore, retroactively, she turns out to have been divorced. That's Rashi's framework. Rabbeinu Tam does not like Rashi's formulation. Looking over at Tosfos, Perish Bekuntrus, Rashi explained, She'em yamus ba'milchama yehi get mish'as ksivaso, that in the event that he dies in battle, it will be a get retroactive to the time when the get was. So this is a long Tosfos, and where various points are made. But first of all, he says, V'kasha l'Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says this is difficult. De'im kein, if this is true, my kol hayotze, he says, first of all, why are you telling me that everybody who went to war would write such a get? If the goal is really to prevent a yibum problem, yibum is only an issue if they don't have a child, number one, and the soldier has a brother. But if they have children, there's no such thing as yibum. If the soldier doesn't have a brother, there's no such thing as yibum. So why are you telling me that everybody would write such a get? It doesn't make any sense. You wouldn't make everybody write such a get. You just have in this narrow set of cases. That's number one. Number two, he says, Va'odisnan, I have a Mishnah which raises a difficult question. The question is, applicable to all cases of a conditional get, what happens during the period when you don't know whether the get is going to be binding or not? Since you're saying the get is applicable retroactively, so what happens during that interim period? That's a question in the beginning of the Gemara in Gittin, although he quotes a discussion later in the Masechta here in Tosfos. But it's a classic question, right? Imagine the following scenario. A woman is married to a Kohen. Okay, leave aside the battlefield get discussion. A woman is married to a Kohen, and the Kohen gives her a get saying, if I don't show up in the next 30 days, right? If I don't show up in the next 30 days, then this is going to be a valid get. And then 15 days later, he dies. So what does that mean? Is she a widow because he died after 15 days? Or do I say, no, she's a divorcee, because at 30 days, he won't show up, and therefore retroactively, she's divorced, because he didn't show up in 30 days. How do I view her status? It creates this bizarre in-between status. So look at, and now we'll understand why that is relevant for our discussion. Look at the point Tosfos makes. The Ode Disnan B'misha Achzo Kordaikus, the seventh parak in Gittin, we learned, Mahi Ba'osen Hayamim. What is the status of a woman during that in-between period when you don't know whether the get will be binding or not? And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Harehi Ke'eshes Ish L'chol Dvareha. Rabbi Yehuda says she is considered to be a married woman for all intents and purposes during that interim period. Well, if that's true, then when David goes to Bathsheba, she is considered a married woman. Right? Because that's during the interim period. That's a big, big problem. Not only that, there's an additional problem, which Tosfos points out later on. Where is it? If I find it quickly, otherwise I'll just say it outside. Tosfos points out you have an additional problem. Over here. V'im toma, v'rei chazar urya v'nisbat el haget. He says you have another problem. Actually, no, that's sorry. He's making a different point at this stage. So I'll just say it outside. The other problem that Rabbeinu Tam raises is David at this stage doesn't know that Uriah won't survive the war. Right? If it's a conditional get, such that if Uriah dies, then they're actually divorced, what if Uriah survives the war? In that case, she's a married woman. David is playing a very dangerous game in doing this. So Rabbeinu Tam says that's not what this was. Rabbeinu Tam Mefaresh, it is in the wide lines here, fifth wide line in Tosfos, or fifth medium line in Tosfos. Rabbeinu Tam Mefaresh, Kosev get krisos legamri below shum tnai. Rabbeinu Tam says it was not a conditional get. It was a real get. They were actually divorced when they went to battle. That's the way to read it. Then Tosfos has to deal with certain other problems that raises. But my point is in bringing this is simply to say that it's a machlokes Rashi Rabbeinu Tam as to how this get actually worked. Was it conditional, Rashi's view, or was it actual, Rabbeinu Tam's view? Clear? You can see why Rabbeinu Tam is frustrated with Rashi's read. It really does raise all sorts of questions about what it was that happened there.
Rabbi, in general rule, if a guy gives a conditional get, it's going to be following 30 days, and then he dies in 15 days, and then we have a call of any guy to get La Carmista. So
right, so here they're saying Mehayom. It's conditional, it's retroactive.
Oh, retroactive.
Yeah, when you say Mehayom, it's back to the beginning, correct. Yeah. So that was one point that I wanted to clarify in terms of this in terms of this story with the get from David's army. I also thought it would be worthwhile to take a minute because I was asked this question during the shiur last week, and I mentioned there was an issue with it, but I didn't expand on it, of the application of this kind of conditional get in our day. There, number one, there was an attempt to do it for the IDF. I mentioned that briefly last week. I'll show it to you this week. And number two, there's actually a modern prenuptial agreement that some have put forth in Israel that tries to harness the idea of this conditional get in a very creative way. First of all, in terms of the IDF case, so I brought you the source in source number one, Rav Yitzchak Halevi Herzog, who was the chief rabbi at the time when the state was actually founded, right? Everyone talks about Rav Kook as the first chief rabbi of the modern state of Israel. Rav Kook never saw the modern state of Israel. Rav Kook passed away in the 30s. But he was the first chief rabbi in the period of the British Mandate. And Rav Herzog was the chief rabbi when they actually formed a state. So I brought you the Hebrew is on the first side, and then the English is on the second side, because I've used it in a shiur before, so I had my English translation, and that's what we'll work with. Rav Herzog tried to suggest that soldiers in the IDF should write this get as a conditional get, like Rashi. So look at what I wrote here for the translation. Arranging a get for each soldier who goes to war is difficult when they separate. Meaning, it's not as though it's a neat thing when people get called up to battle and everybody files through some area and you could have a sofa ready and the sofa is just going to write the get, you know, name, you know, and you have your witnesses ready, and it doesn't work that way. In practice, when people are going off to war from different parts of the country at different times, it's extremely difficult to imagine that you're going to have, you know, sofrim ready who know what to do and who can just, you know, fill in the blanks and arrange this get. That's number one. And impossible on a practical level other than by arranging to license an agent. I mean, the only way you're really going to do it is if the soldier executes a form that licenses an agent to have the get taken care of in his absence. That's the only way this is going to work. And he says in this too, there's great room for debate. This is not straightforward. Only here we stumble into another difficulty when the husband arrives on furlough. What if the husband comes home and now he wants to be with his wife? If the get has not yet been executed, meaning if it's not a done deal, there is concern for canceling it when he returns. The concern is that if he comes home, his actions with his wife cancel the get, meaning even though it's a conditional get. He wrote the get on January 1, saying that if he doesn't come back by whenever, if he doesn't survive the war, this is the get retroactive to January 1. The war is still going on February 1 when he comes home for a visit. That's still fine. The get can still be valid. The problem is that if he lives with his wife on February 1, we may look at that and say, that is an act of canceling the get. That demonstrates that he wants to be married to her. He doesn't want to divorce her. So he says, I'm going to address this concern. Rambam rules that if one tells witnesses to write thus, meaning to write a conditional get, and he is then alone with his wife, and then the witnesses write the get and deliver it to her, it's void. Because by being with his wife, he demonstrated that he doesn't really want to divorce her. Ramban and others have disputed this, saying she might be divorced. No, it might be valid. That's in some ways worse, because now you have a doubt. Is she married? Is she not married? But opposite this concern, we have already established that since, in the case that Rav Herzog envisions, he swears a serious oath, accepting upon penalty of cherem that he will not cancel the agency. He's not canceling the assignment of the get. We may presume he has not canceled it, so long as we do not hear him do so explicitly. You follow? In a stam case, in a case where you didn't specify, so then yes, living with the wife sounds like he doesn't want to divorce her anymore. However, if he stipulated, he swore, he is not going to cancel this, then we'll treat the get as still live, even though he lived with her. And he says, all agree to this. Further, why should he cancel it? This concern is only where he wants to divorce his wife due to enmity. The idea that living with her cancels the get only makes sense if the reason for the divorce was because they can't stand each other. So getting together says, oh, they can't stand each other. But he says, that's not what you're talking about here. He wishes to give the get out of love. He's taking care of her by giving the get. So why would we assume that because he lived with her as man and wife, he should be presumed to have canceled the get? That was Rav Herzog's argument in favor of this. Is that clear? We good? All right, we have like five people here I can't see. I'm hoping that they're okay with it also.
Just a question.
Yeah.
Apropos to the present and good of Rome.
Yes.
Why couldn't we give a conditional get today with an irrevocable direction that upon the granting of a second divorce, the husband designates the Beis Din as his agent to give a get?
Right. So that essentially is what the tripartite agreement tries to do. If you take a look at source number two, this is only part of the tripartite agreement. If I gave you a link with source number two, to a shiur that I gave that discussed the multiple parts of this. It's a more complex thing, but this is one of their avenues, is what Chuck is suggesting. Modified format, but same idea. Take a look. In this agreement, which is supposed to be agreed to before they get married, the groom agrees to the following. Should a Jewish divorce be requested of me for whatever reason by any Orthodox rabbinical court selected by my wife, even if at the time of our separation I explicitly reject the particular rabbinical court she selects, I also appoint anyone who will see my signature on this form or a copy of this form to act as scribe, meaning to write such a get. I undertake with all seriousness, he says, even with an oath of the Torah, and I underlined here, that I will not nullify the effectiveness of the get. And I nullify any kind of a statement that I may have made which could hurt the effectiveness of the get to divorce my wife. He's creating a conditional get from that moment when he enters into this agreement, that if a Beis Din demands, forget needing a secular divorce, if a Beis Din demands a get from him, he is assigning so-and-so to be the one to write the get. And he says, even if my wife and I should continue to reside together after the providing of this authorization to divorce her, and even if we have a sexual relationship after I've authorized the writing, signing, and delivery of a get, because after all, they're going to live together after he's authorized this, such a sexual relationship should not be construed as implicitly or explicitly nullifying this authorization to write, sign, and deliver a get. Exactly what Rav Herzog said. You say openly, living with her will not disqualify this this get. So tell me, how many problems can you see in this picture?
Well, I see one, because we have a clause that says in other be a loss of less news. And so you can't say that if, you know, the get is still held, because then what does it make the relationship?
So that's actually, I think, not a problem. The concern that Rav Simi points out is that we do have a principle which says that ein adam osa bilas obilas zinus, that one will not, given the opportunity to live with one's mate in a permitted way, one will not do it in a prohibited way. Let me give you the context for the case that Rav Simi is presenting. They talk about the following case. A man and a woman get divorced. And then they spend the night together afterwards. So the question is, did the man intend to be with her for the sake of kiddushin, like this, they're now married all over again? Or was it just promiscuous? And the answer that they give there is that he wouldn't do this for zinus purposes. Clearly, he intended it for the sake of marriage. He intended it for the sake of being married to her, and therefore they are considered to be at least potentially married, if not actually married. That's the argument. However, here, at the time of the relations, they wouldn't have been prohibited. He lives with her all this time in a permitted way. He's intending to remain married to her, you know, forever. So it. Yeah. No, because everybody knows he doesn't intend to divorce her. However, he has made a statement that eventually he will, eventually down the line, in the event that things fall apart, he will divorce her. And yes, that will be retroactive. However, the times when he lived with her at those moments, he didn't think he was doing an avera. He didn't think he was doing anything wrong. It also wouldn't qualify as nus per se.
So, I foresee a problem, and I have a question. Is this an oath? Because if it's not an oath, even though today he expresses an intention not to revoke it, even though he gives an undertaking, he's still permitted to revoke it.
Yes.
If he's still permitted to revoke it, you can always revoke an agency setting to get, as long as you get it before. So this could, so a rogue husband wanted to revoke the agency could still do so, unless we allow an irrevocable direction, which you've already told me we don't.
Correct.
And unless we make this a neder.
Right. So even making it a neder will just mean he broke his neder. It won't mean that the...
You can't void a neder. You can't break a neder without a basin or a mouth, right?
No. People break their vows all the time. They just get in trouble for it. In other words, first of all, let's just clarify. It's a shavua rather than a neder. A neder is about an object. Shavua is about an action. You're not supposed to do it, and he's in hot water for doing so, but it's effective if he does so. If a person says he swears that he is not going to eat meat. He says he's never eating meat again. And then he eats meat. So he broke his shavua. He's liable, but he broke the shvua. He's still fleishik.
But if he makes a shvua to do something he's not permitted to do.
Yeah.
Is the shvua hold?
So that raises other questions. Meaning, you're not allowed to take a shvua to do something that is prohibited. But that's not what you're describing. His shvua.
Well, maybe. If the Rabbanim say that this is the proper conduct, maybe that would fall into that category.
It doesn't help you. I mean, I'm not going to go there because there's too much other stuff to talk about, but it doesn't work. But
okay.
First of all, on pure halachic grounds, first of all, Poskim opposed Rav Herzog's idea back in the day. Rav Chaim Odzer, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, they did not like his idea in general of this whole let's restore the conditional get and don't worry about what happens when he goes home on furlough. That's number one. Number two, the get in that case meaning in the military case is talking about where the husband disappears and is presumed dead. That's where this is an issue. It's not talking about a case in which the husband is running around and we can get a get from him. It's where the husband is presumed dead anyway, and the get is just a formality to make sure that this way there's no concern about the wife's ability to remarry. That's number two. Number three, and I suspect this is what Dov turned on video to say, is he isn't even married to her yet in this case, in source number two. They're not even married yet. He can't arrange a get before Nisuin. There's a general rule. You can't appoint a shaliach to do something that you can't do yourself. You can't appoint an agent to do something that you are personally ineligible to do. So a man who has not yet married a woman could not write a get for her now. Therefore, he cannot appoint a proxy to write a get for her. It doesn't work. Dov, is that what you're going to say?
No.
Oh.
Makes sense.
Why aren't they married? You know, you're talking about the case of David?
He's not, no, the tripartite, the prenup. I'm talking prenup. Yeah. But that's another reason why this won't work. And then, there's a whole other raft of problems, which are psychological problems. In the case in the IDF, right, or in Shaul's army, in David's army, the husband comes home on furlough. He's there for a day. He's there for 2 days. He's got a 72-hour pass. And then he's back at the front. You can argue that he didn't intend to restore married life. In this case, the prenup case, God willing, they're living together for years and years and years. You think that whole time it didn't dawn on him that he wants to be married to her? Worse than that, when the man lives with her, in the case of the prenup, imagine the following scenario. They're married, they're together, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, and then things go bad. And they reach a point where it's bad enough that she's going to go to a Beis Din. He doesn't want to divorce her. He's continuing to live with her, saying, I don't want to divorce her. It's really hard to say that at this point, when he is shouting, I'm not giving a get, so much so that you need to invoke a prenup to get it, it's really hard to think that he is maintaining his original commitment to the divorce. He's saying, I'm not giving the get. He's obviously not committed to the divorce anymore. And to go further with it, and this is Rav Henkin's argument, in the IDF case, right, in the Shaul and David case, as we already saw from Rav Herzog, the reason to do this get is out of love for her, right? Whereas in the prenup case, he doesn't expect to divorce her. The only reason he's doing this is to make her happy now so that she's going to marry him. But he doesn't really intend to ever have this happen, right? No one enters a relationship saying, in the event that I become so angry at her that I refuse to give her a get, here's a get. No one ever says that and intends that. That doesn't make any sense.
But was the original Kedushin, I don't know enough about these prenups, but was it conditional of him agreeing to give her this? In which case, maybe by not agreeing to it afterwards, he somehow uprooted the Kedushin.
So there actually is, one of the clauses in this tripartite agreement is that if these different things I have agreed to beforehand don't work, then the whole thing is void, you know, in the first place. If I remember correctly, that's part of the tripartite agreement.
Which would resolve the Aguna issue.
No. Not necessarily, because then you go back to Rav Simi's point, and Ein Adam Ose Bilas O Bilas Nus, the idea that he's now setting up his entire relationship with her for years and years to not be a halachic marriage is problematic. But I'll tell you what, go to the recording there that I linked there, because I gave the shiur on this, it's now, I think, 3 years ago, and I'm not remembering all of it. So go back and catch the shiur there, and there I discussed it more fully. I just thought that it's an interesting point to bring once we mention this get from Shaul's army and David's army. Okay, let's go a little further in the Gemara. We had Rabbi Elazar's statement that a man is credible to say Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, that he did not find Besulim, and therefore they'll be prohibited to each other. So Abaye says, I can prove that Rabbi Elazar is correct. And this is the last bit on this discussion before they get to the question, which we sort of started to discuss a few weeks ago, the question of, well, what happens to her ksuba in that situation? So we are now at Amar Abaye, the fifth line on Tesamid Beis 9b. You should be able to see it on your screen. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Af anan nami tanena. I learned this too. This statement that when the husband says, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, I didn't find Besulim, now he's going to be prohibited to his wife. We've learned the following. It's our Mishnah from the beginning of the Masechta. Besula niseis liyom haravi'i, the Mishnah said. A Besula gets married on Wednesday. And we asked, why on Wednesday? In order that, in the event that something happened, he didn't find Besulim, he'll go to Beis Din the next day, right? Liyom Ravi'i in, get married on Wednesday. Liyom Chamishi lo, don't get married on Thursday. My time, why? Mishum ikrure daita, because of fear that otherwise he'll cool off before they can go to Beis Din, right? That was what we said back in the beginning of the Masechta. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Ulamai. Why, this is Abaye arguing. He says, why are you concerned about him cooling off? So let's say he cools off. He doesn't go to Beis Din. Now what? Ela Mesa of Luxuba. If your concern is she's going to get a ksuba of a basula and not deserve it because he's going to have calmed down, who cares? Nasiv lost, so give her 200 zuz. That's your problem, pal. If you calmed down, and therefore you didn't make your allegation, and therefore she was treated as a basula, and therefore she's going to get the ksuba of basula and not deserve it, that's his problem. That's not my problem. We don't need to make takanos to get married on Wednesday because of that. Ela la osra alav. So Abaye says that's not our concern. Our concern, the reason why we don't want him to calm down, is because he is prohibited to her by dint of his statement of Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. Doesn't that support Rabbi Elazar? Udekata in Taina. He is making this claim, and my love, isn't it Dekata in Tanas Pesach Pasuach? Isn't that he is claiming that there were no Besulim, and you see that that is sufficient to prohibit them to each other, and that's why we want to make sure he's going to Beis Din? To which the Gemara says, not so fast, and it makes a distinction that we had not yet seen in this Masechta. Lo, not necessarily. Dekatayin ta'anas damim. It's where he claims that there was no bleeding. In other words, if he claims there are no basulim, that is not sufficient to prohibit her to him. If he claims there was no bleeding, that is sufficient. Why would I distinguish between these two claims? Why does it prohibit them if he says there's no bleeding, but not if he says there was no hymen? What's the difference? Why is it that if he says there was no bleeding, then he's prohibited to her? But if he says there was no hymen, he's not prohibited to her?
When you can see, when you can't see.
Exactly, as Byron just said. It's a matter of what kind of credibility he has to make such a claim. As Rashi says, going back to the Amud, Rashi says, Tanas damim detayna mivureres hi. That's a clear claim. We can't say, oh, he just, you know, didn't understand what he was seeing. Aval pesach pasuach. But as far as saying that there was no hymen, emalach lo kimle, I could tell you that he didn't really know. So therefore, this source here that Abaye brought, our Mishnah, doesn't prove that Rabbi Elazar is correct. Because Rabbi Elazar said pesach pasuach, that there's no hymen, is enough to prohibit. Our Mishnah could just be that where he says there was no bleeding, that's enough to prohibit. It doesn't prove Rabbi Elazar's point. Clear?
Yeah. But there are other instances we've talked about where there could be no bleeding, but she's still Basua.
Correct. And that may end up being the response. And that's actually going to come up sort of sideways in the next discussion. When it comes to trying to cross her the Ksuba, the argument can be made, well, wait a minute, there are other reasons why she may not have Besulim. It may have nothing to do with any sort of illicit conduct. Absolutely true. So let's start on, we'll take a couple of minutes into the new Sugya and see how this goes. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Okay, we're about 10 lines up from the bottom. Rav Yehuda says, quoting Shmuel, Ha'omer Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. If the man says there was no hymen, and right now it sounds like he's saying not no bleeding, but there was no hymen at all. Neman lahafsida ksubasa. He is credible to cost her the ksuba of a basula. Tosfos notes, in addition to prohibiting them to each other. In other words, definitely prohibited to each other, and she no longer gets the ksuba of a basula. Now that's shocking. Why in the world should that be true? Why is he credible to cost her? You know, he just made a random statement. He has no proof whatsoever. What in the world is this about? So Rashi says you need to see a Gemara that we're going to see on Yud Amud Aleph. Rava is going to make a statement on Daf Yud. It is a psychological assertion. And the way the line goes on Daf Yud, those who have an actual Gemara can see it, is Ein Adam Toreach Bisseuda Umafsida. You assume that the groom would not put in all the effort of creating the wedding meal in order to sabotage everything by making this claim falsely about her. It's a psychological chazaka. We assume he's telling the truth because lying is not in his best interests. No one would put himself in this kind of position. We do similar things with other psychological chazakos. So, for example, we say that if a woman comes to Beis Din and says her husband died, we believe her to allow her to remarry. Why in the world do you believe her to be able to remarry? We have no evidence. She has proved nothing. Yeah, but we know that if she would get caught, she'd be in terrible, terrible trouble. Therefore, we assume she's telling the truth when she makes this assertion. We have a principle when it comes to loans, right? Debts. That if Reuven says, I lent Shimon $1,000, and Shimon says back, you never lent me anything, we don't make Shimon swear to the validity of his claim. On the other hand, if Shimon says, you only lent me $500, then Shimon has to swear about the rest. Why? Because we assume that no one would be so brazen as to deny that the loan ever happened. If he says there was never any loan, we believe him by default. Whereas, if he denies part and he admits part, then we think maybe he's just kind of trying to play games until he's able to get all the money together. He's just trying to stall. And that's when we say, we want you to swear. There's more to be said about this case. And about psychological chazakos in general. But this is the idea. As Rashi explains it based on Rava on Daf Yud, it is a psychological assumption that he would be, that he would not lie in order to make this claim. There is also, Tosfos points out, there's one other reason to accept it. It's Tosfos, Ilam Esav. Earlier on the same page, we have a principle of Oki Mamona Bechezkas Mare. Keep the money with whoever has it right now. If I have a doubt, don't make money change hands. Our default assumption is that it is better to err on the side of keeping money where it is than to err on the side of causing a payment inappropriately. So in this case, he's the one who's holding the money. So therefore, since we are in doubt, keep the money with him. And so that's another reason why he would be able to hold on to this. We still have to see more in the Gemara about it, but that's where the Gemara is right now.
That last reason any different than what you're over, right?
No, it's just the flip side. That's all. So I said something in the very beginning of the shir, but not everybody was on yet. God willing, as of this coming Shabbos, we're going to be having shir at the Bayit, and it's going to be...